Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show where we play through the Fallout games and talk about them. This is episode 56, episode 4 of Fallout 4. I'm Cameron, and with me as always is young Michael.
Mm-hmm. Chipper young Michael.
How does it feel to game, young Michael?
Since the first caveman awoke from his bed of pine needles, he has yearned to game. And in the contemporary context, we have more opportunities to game than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Wow, profound.
Uh-huh.
They keep, that video game comedy website keeps trying to get that first gamer president elected, and they've got a better candidate right under their nose.
Mm-hmm. The first caveman.
Yep. Well, yeah, I was referring to your speech. You gave a Buttigieg-like speech about the powers of gaming.
That is true. That was a pretty Buttigieg speech.
So learned.
You can really tell, right? He was a mayor.
You can really tell. You can really tell he knows several languages. We're getting political here at the top. This is the show now. Yeah. If you don't want to get political, get out of here. much like Stephen King on stage in Florida. We're going to get political.
Call me a commie simp if you want, but I actually think the arts are sort of important.
Because this episode we'll be talking about the media.
And how unfair it is.
Yeah. And how there are robots that look like people that are replacing people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And some other stuff. Knights and paladins and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it. This is a little bit of a grab bag episode in the sense of we are just kind of... Fallout 4 is a little bit odd compared to some of the other ones because, well, maybe not. I don't know. I guess the structure is a little bit closer to Fallout 1 and Fallout 2.
Yeah.
I guess is what I mean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that while playing through this, specifically because of how the stuff that we're playing through today is sort of like we are going there because it is important for like story stuff, I think, at least some of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like, say, Fallout 3, you know, Bethesda design, where we would have been pointed directly to this place by some kind of main story quest. We actually, like, we have met a major faction, and, you know, it's designed into the world in such a way that you meeting them is supposed to be emergent rather than something that you are pointed toward.
Yeah, in both of the you know, Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3, right, it was like you're introduced to a hub that gives you a bunch of spokes, and those spokes will all take you to other hubs that will give you some spokes, right, as far as quests are concerned. And this one here is kind of like Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 in that, like, you just kind of got to wander around a little bit, and you'll find some stuff you're looking for, but you'll find some quests, and sometimes you won't. And it feels a little bit more unguided. I think people might like to call this player freedom.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Maybe it is. I don't have a strong enough opinion about that this early in the morning on this day. But I will say it's a little bit of a... It's harder to plan this season in some ways. Because after everything we record, I'm like, all right, what quests do you have? And then we kind of do it. And of course, there is like a main quest line. And in the next couple episodes, we'll kind of get a little bit closer to that. And it'll feel a little bit more like the Fallout 3 season where it's like main quest line stuff and then other stuff and main quest line stuff and then other stuff. But at this early point, it's just like, hey, do you want to live in a wasteland for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Go and do it. Any weird small stuff happen to you? Anything, any emergent fun stuff happen to you here before we talk about the kind of three big quests we did today?
No, this set of quests was rather low on kind of interesting and weird stuff. How about you?
Nope. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a lot of interesting weird stuff happen while they occurred,
Oh, yes,
that
yes.
That I'm happy to talk about, but no, no, no really, they're pretty offset by themselves. I guess one thing that happened that I can talk about now, so I don't have to talk about it later, is that who is your companion you got following you around?
At this point, still Piper.
Okay, so you haven't looked up a mod to get like 15 of them or anything like that yet.
So I did. I looked into the mods, and I think basically, I'm a little leery of putting mods in to have multiple companions because it seems like it might break some stuff. And I, from what I can tell, like one of the most effective mods for multi-companion junk is having dog meat with you all the time plus someone else, because it looks like dog meat was actually planned to be a constant companion throughout the game. And then they cut that in kind of, you know, the Wizard's Quarter of development or whatever, for whatever reason.
Right.
So I know I haven't put in any mods or anything because actually some of the stuff that happened in this playthrough, I got like my standing, it's not a, I guess maybe it's affection, I don't know if that's the right word, whatever the little like index is for your companions that determines how much they like you. I got high enough with that, I guess, with Piper, that she like started just talking to me in the middle of a mission, and I could understand why that would be a problem if I had a mod that let me have, I don't know, two or three guys running around behind me who all really loved me and wanted to tell me their life stories.
Well, so that's actually why I brought it up, that exact thing that you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Because this whole time, for the 2 hours or whatever that I played for this episode, Piper was constantly walking behind me and being like, "You're always pretty good, aren't you? You're always pretty good, aren't you? Hey, you're pretty good, aren't you? You're always pretty good, aren't you?" Constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anytime I paused for a moment. And I did not realize she was trying to initiate a conversation with me.
Right.
And I was like, why would this bark be in the game? Why would they just play the one thing over and over and over again? And partially it has to do, too, with the fact that I'm playing in third person, which means that some things, like focus pulling, you know, like so the camera kind of zooming in and scrolling over to them to let you know that they're talking to you, that doesn't really happen in third person. It doesn't work correctly.
Oh, yeah.
I figured out why my character keeps turning away in the middle of conversations. It's because I'm moving the mouse ever so slightly when I'm like making my selection, and moving the mouse in between, it seems like in between frames of like animation, or in between animations triggering, not frames of animation, that causes the character model to reorient. And so still Tonk is constantly like facing characters and talking to them and being like, blah, 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 blah. And then it'll cut over to them and it cuts back to Tonk, and he has totally turned around 180 degrees, looking over his shoulder as hard as he can at them, like very mysteriously. He'll be like, blah, 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 blah. It's very funny. But yes, there's some little quirks that have to do with like even the way that I'm playing the game that matter there. But yeah, she was trying to initiate a conversation with me to like have a deep emotional journey in the middle of like a robot factory that I was not interested in. But so that's a little bit of a quirk of this game, is that it's brought in these narrative layers, but the narrative layers, I would say, don't quite align with some of the other layers, you know, the kind of more control-y layers of what's going on. I don't know if you're feeling that friction or whatever.
Oh, yeah, no. I feel like in the dialogue system especially, I think the lack of a, I don't know exactly how we would put it, but like in a Fallout 3 or a New Vegas, you know, you talk to someone and it like locks in on their face and it becomes like its own interface, right? It becomes like a hard frame. I understand the impulse to be like, oh, well, what if everything was kind of just sort of like, you know, free floating and in the environment, in engine, whatever, for this sense of maybe like smoothness or what have you. But it actually makes the game feel less smooth, because overall, I can't distinguish, like you were talking about, I can't distinguish between like random like little barks that characters are giving versus like things that are actually initiating conversation. And because I can like walk away from a character who's trying to initiate conversation, it ends up feeling like it's just a bark or something.
Right. And especially, too, I feel like I'm missing a lot of, like, interesting conversations that go... Because, you know, Piper will be like, hold on, give me a minute. And then she'll walk off. And I'm already in a conversation with someone else. Where mm-hmm. I'm, like, listening to something they're doing. And then she's having, like, a little... sidebar convo, right? That's like its own little bit of narrative stuff that seems to be unique. These layers, like, I guess projecting narrative and conversation out broadly is very cool conceptually. But in practice, often makes it feel like I'm having to split my attention, and also the subtitles can't handle more than one conversation at a time.
Yeah.
And so I can't really hear what's going on. I will say it has created some really cool moments that I think are, I mean, they're not designed, right? They are purely, emergent, and they are accidental, but they are neat. And I'll talk about some of them later. But, I ultimately think that, like, it's a split system, right? Like, they just didn't really quite have a sense of which of these was the best option, it seems like, and they just kind of let everything go. Because it's much more directed than Skyrim is, right? Mm-hmm. Which is mostly just random people talking over one another constantly, which is often comedic. And I think they were trying to draw that comedy back, it seems like, right? Like, mm-hmm. can you have groups of people engaging in different things that doesn't just sound funny? And I think they succeeded at that, but also I just think it could be a little bit more direct. It's okay to take a little bit of freedom away from the player, right? Like, mm-hmm. that works. It's fine.
I'm willing to, like, listen to the thing where the game is telling me what I need to do or whatever. Like, it's, I understand this. I'm not going to torch your offices over it.
Right. But yeah, we could talk about, I've got a couple moments that I noted about that, in these quests. You want to, and speaking of a bunch of people talking at one time, you want to talk about Confidence Man, the first quest that we did?
This quest is so weird.
It is weird.
So you initiate this quest. I had to look up how to initiate this quest. It's not one that you can just, like, go to talk to someone and start. I mentioned way back in, I think, the first episode that I, you know, one of the first things I did when I got out of the vault was turned on the radio. And I will say that Travis is a character who is the DJ for Diamond City Radio. It, in the first moment, is extremely funny because he's very uncertain. He just kind of doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing. He's, like, a little afraid, and he's just like, well, that was some music. And then he just, like, goes into the next thing.
So we're in Diamond City. We have a wall. I think it's amazing. I hadn't listened to any of it. Mm-hmm. I don't listen to the radio when I play this game. So I had not listened to a single part of it. And I actually sat down in the bar, the dugout, where you kind of initiate this quest. And the radio's on. And I actually sat down and listened to it a little bit. And that, like, that totally works. And, like, people will comment on it, too. And they'll mm-hmm. be like, this sucks.
Yes.
this is bad. I don't like it.
It's so funny because it plays as such a it's such a swerve from what they did with Three Dog in Fallout 3, right? Like, and yeah. that almost seems to be, like, the conceptual basis of it. Whereas, you know, when you first get to listen to Three Dog, he's, like, on top of it. He knows what he's doing. It's like you are in the wasteland, but you are listening to an old world DJ because he just knows how to run the radio station. And so this guy is just, like, sort of not really talking about anything. It's very funny. So you go into the dugout, and I can't remember exactly how you have to, like, go there at least once and then leave and then come back or something. The dugout is, like, this little bar in Diamond City, and it is run by a guy named Vadim, and his, I guess, twin brother Yefim, which brings back the, like, weird Fallout tradition of people having, like, very specific accents that they, I guess, theoretically couldn't possibly have, because both of these guys seem to be, like, you know, if not Russian, then, like, Eastern European.
I honestly didn't know that. That's the weirdness about Fallout accents, especially in this game with so much voice acting, right? And mm-hmm. so much talking, is, like, they could have been Eastern European. They could have been Israeli.
Yeah.
Right. There's mm-hmm. this kind of like generic that accent, right? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't know. All right, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, like they have it somehow. I think Fallout 3 would have worried in a little bit of world building on this, right? Just to like explain. And here, that doesn't really come up at all. They're not like, ah, yes, we come from like Mother Vault, whatever, you know, like what? And what's the most Russian right. number? They don't do that.
It's got to be in Cyrillic characters,
so. Right? No, he's just like, I am Vadim, and this is Yefim. He is my brother. That sort of thing. Right. And they are
in Soviet Vault.
Where we did experiments on Vault-Tec.
Right.
They start talking to
Sorry. They are one step away from that joke, though.
Yes.
If that joke had happened, I would not have been shocked.
Right.
Even a little bit.
Right. They've got that feel to them as characters, right? And it's just, okay. But Vadim is talking about, like, he's pissed about the radio because it's so bad, and they start out, he and Yefim start out with this conversation where at first it seems like Vadim is like hiring you to kill Travis. And then it's like, oh no, Travis is actually my good friend.
Yeah, his brother's like, hey, don't kill Travis. Because Travis is ruining business. Because the only thing to do is listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And so people come to their bar and the radio's on and it sucks so much that their business is failing.
Right.
That's the pitch you're getting, basically.
Mm-hmm. They don't want to kill him. Vadim has just come up with this plan to, like, give Travis some confidence. And then you have to, like, he was like, I'll tell it to you later. Or, like, I'll tell it to you in, like, the back or whatever. And so you have to, like, wait for him to, like, walk around into the kitchen. And you meet him in the corner, and he explains that he's going to have two guys that he knows. He's going to hire some guys to come in and try to start a fight with Travis when Travis comes in after work, which he does every day. And he wants you to, like, be there to help Travis, because Travis is not himself particularly adept. And these guys aren't going to be, you know, killing Travis or whatever, but he's going to need someone in his corner to help him fight back. And because this is what you have to do to play the game, it's like, yeah, sure, okay. And then you wait until 6 p.m. when Travis shows up. How did this go for you?
They were like, all right, we're going to hire these guys, right? We're going to make Travis powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And we get there, and I've got my officer's sword, right?
Right.
Tonk is ready to murder these men to mm-hmm. help Travis out.
Mm-hmm.
And they it's really funny, there's no, like, setup to it, right? Like, Travis comes, he's there, he's wearing his little baseball outfit like so many people are, right? He's wearing his little, like, Letterman jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a little nerd.
Mm-hmm.
He's, I'm Travis, I don't know what I'm doing. Oh, gosh. Oh. And they're like, hey, Travis, you suck at the radio. I'm going to beat you up. And it's a very he's a well-performed character,
mm-hmm.
and a well-written character. And then they put him in this, like, little cul-de-sac of nowhere to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can just be like, hey, Travis, beat him up, Travis. Do it. Get him, Travis. Don't take it, Marty. Don't take that, Marty McFly. Or actually, I guess it's George McFly. Don't take that, George. Get him, George. And then he does.
Mm-hmm. You can just watch them do this forever.
Oh. Just intimidate Travis for eternity?
Yes, because I was, like, waiting to see if it, like, escalated or built to anything. And I just mm-hmm. stood there, and they just, like, repeat the same things back and forth to each other, where they're just, like, saying the same insults, and he's like, Oh, I don't know. And then they say one of their other insults that they've already said before, and he responds very, very frightenedly. And you can just watch for quite a while until you get close enough to actually talk to Travis, and then, yeah, do this whole thing where all hell breaks loose and they take away. I had my hunting rifle popped out. But when the thing really pops off, they make you, your weapons disappear, because I think Vadim does say, like, no weapons or something. He doesn't want, like, mm-hmm. blood spilled in the bar, and you have to, like, punch them out.
Yep, I went into vats and got them. Boom, boom, pow, zing.
Hmm.
Beat them up. And, yeah, so that was fun. It was a good time. Then, I mean, this is, like, the goofiest part of it, right? Because the additional layer here is, like, Travis needs a lady.
Right.
That's part of his problem.
Right. It's like, where does this come from?
Right. So, well, it's, you gotta build him up,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's his confidence.
Right.
You gotta let him do violence and then get laid.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
it's
I
like,
mean?
Travis, here are the Instagrams you should be following.
Right, he's got to learn some rules,
mm-hmm.
perhaps some rules of power. He's got to learn make his bed mm-hmm. when he gets up in the morning. Right,
yeah,
like they're like Vadim's selling some bad stuff.
Yeah,
yes.
Here's the Mustang that you need to be visualizing every morning when you wake up.
Right, I mean the everyone knows about the Mustang, but they don't know about the books that you read. You know. The books you got to read. That's the most important part. You got to read a book a day. So, right, like, we're getting Vadim on this path, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's about to become a little alpha. You know what I mean? A zeta.
Yeah.
That's where we're getting him.
Oh, God.
I mean, but that, you know, we joke, but that is kind of what's going on here, right? It's
yeah.
like, to fix him and make him good now, right? And to make the radio good again. Again, that's like the whole
yes.
background. It's like, we're doing this to make the radio good. The radio is bad, so we need to, like, make him like, get involved in, like, traditional masculinity after the death of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We got to jumpstart traditional masculinity in Travis to make the radio good again, which is just like so silly. So anyway, she's a waitress?
Yeah, or server or something. Scarlet.
And you got to go talk to her and be like, hey, basically, we got to go get Travis' girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So we go talk to her and she says, hey, I want to be Travis's girlfriend. I like him. And you say, well, why don't you go talk to Travis? And she said, okay, fine. I will. That sounds great. And I have one charisma. Or whatever, you know, whatever it is, charisma, right?
I think
that's
so. Yeah,
special. So yeah. So see, I have one. It's one point in it, and it still worked. And it was like it's like all a charisma thing. So like, great, what a challenge. You know what I mean? Like I didn't mm-hmm. have to circumvent this anyway. So got him locked into compulsive heterosexuality
mm-hmm.
Vis-a-vis the local bar owner,
mm-hmm.
Telling his employee that she needs to go get with the guy.
Yep.
And then you go back to meet with him, and lo and behold, the owner of the bar has been kidnapped.
Yep. Yep. Yefim is like, oh no, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
He has been taken by bad people. And
true.
For some reason, you have to go ask Travis about this.
I forgot about that. Yeah. And he's like, I want to do violence.
Well, it's like Travis is the one who knows where like their hideout is somehow, I think. I played this a while ago and I reviewed my footage this morning and I had already edited it down for sending to you. So I might have like missed something. Yeah, you have to go like talk to Travis.
Yeah, I don't remember. But yeah, someone knows here. And, yeah, he's like, they're in the Beantown Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what people in Boston love.
Yeah.
When you call it Beantown.
Yeah, no, it's, beloved here.
Yeah, they're jazzed about it. And so, but yeah, he's basically, you can be like, Travis, don't come with me. But he's like, I gotta do it.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta do it. And so Travis really jumps immediately from, like, guy who's never fought anyone before in his life. To guy who went on one date to the soda fountain and mm-hmm. had a malt, and now he is ready to pick up a gun and murder other human beings.
Yep.
On his journey to making the radio good.
Yes.
and you know, I don't know. I don't know why, like, this is the shape of it. Also, the guy has been kidnapped by Butch?
No, Bull and Gouger.
Bull and Gouger. Who are the people that they hired to be beat up beforehand? The kind of, I guess, ringers? I don't know.
Yeah.
The fall guys. Yeah, fall guys. Yeah.
They're like, pissed at Vadim for, I think, either not paying them enough or, like, they didn't expect to get their butts whooped as bad as they did.
Yeah. I mean, Tonk the Fourth showed up in a suit that is just a fucking tire wrapped around his torso. And he started wailing on him. You know what I mean? He's burly.
Yeah.
They were not ready for that. And so they were like, and when they left earlier, they were like, we're going to get you for this. I'll be back. I'm a villain in Fallout. Mm-hmm. I talk like this. Hey, look, here's the deal. Next Fallout's coming up at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Hire me.
Yeah.
I can do this voice all day. I can say all kinds of, ugh, coffee. Ugh. And, like, where's it going to be set? It's going to be set in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fallout Twin Cities.
Oh, the Midwest. Yeah. Oh, the river.
Oh my God.
I can't believe we're here.
Oh, my God. It's the Twin Cities, and the new seal is, like, the dual-headed Brahmin.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I can't. This is me. I'm the raider who's taking over that bridge in the middle of the town.
Uh-huh.
Or in the middle of the sea. I can't believe we're standing here where the Mississippi River begins. Is that, what do you think?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Just getting a little bit of information there, yeah. You know? we used to control this whole thing. Back when I controlled the gang. No, wait. Back when I was in charge of the gang. There we go.
I heard there was a death claw at Fort Lutefisk.
They would all have to... No, so that's the thing. Is much like this game, where everybody talks like this. I'm from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm from... yeah, I'm from New Jersey and also Boston.
Right. I'm from distinct places along the eastern seaboard.
Right, so you're going to have to, for Fallout Twin Cities, it would have to be, there'd have to be a strong Canadian accent in there for some reason.
Uh-huh.
And also maybe, like, I don't know, a different Midwest of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Fargo, yeah. You know?
A couple Chicago guys in there for some reason.
Yeah, Chicago. New Jersey. but anyway, so you got to go out to the Beantown Brewery.
Yeah.
And whip a bunch of ass.
I'd already been out here and cleared it out. Huh. This was one of the things that I did just kind of on my own little lonesome exploring. This is actually, I referenced it, I think, in a previous episode where this was where I was like hacking someone's terminal. And instead of getting like cool pre-war, here's how this wacky place like completely destroyed itself on the eve of nuclear disaster, which is mostly what you'd be getting out of these terminals in previous games. Here it's just like, here's what our inventory was.
Here's the people we don't like. Here's the person we kidnapped. It's a pretty cool little story. I think you told it in the other episode, but... To summarize, it's like they raided the food factory.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Federal Food Reserve or something like that.
Yeah.
And food depository. they raided it and they kidnapped one of the sisters.
Yeah.
Of the twin sisters of the people who lead it. And then they were like extorting the other people for food. And then they accidentally killed the sister. And so they had to like figure that out. They're like sending these fake letters and stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a pretty cool little story.
Yeah. I mean, the Raider story was cool. I just meant, like, there's a pre-war terminal I think you can hack to
that has
no information on it.
Oh, okay. I got what you're saying. I thought you were talking about both at the same time. But it's a different thing, right? It's, like, not... It's the contemporary story, right? Where other Fallouts would be, like, lore or something that would enliven the whole thing. This is, like, the third terminal I've hacked that's been, like, Raider relations.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like Raider geopolitics,
right.
Which is not interesting because, and it's trying to solve the problem we talked about before, right? The orc problem.
Yes.
Like, like Raiders are not just goblins. They're goblins with feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. All you're doing is being like, I'm a goblin with feelings. It's like you have created writing terminals that are just a different version of the, I hope I don't die here tonight. I have a family at home now. My wonderful wife and child all the way at home. I hope Sam Fisher isn't here to murder me. Anyway, let me go on my route. Well, let me walk in the same circle for the next 40 minutes.
This is underscored by the fact that I'd already been through here and cleared this out. So when I came back for this quest, the like raiders here had just respawned without their named leaders.
Oh, that's funny.
So it was just like, you know, a repopulating dungeon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so really it just makes them like leveled up goblins. They're goblin level two, mm-hmm. You know, goblin with history.
They're walking around saying suspiciously loudly, I love having interiority.
It's great having a soul. I hope no one steals it. I hope no one puts it in an orb. But yeah, so I follow these guys. Tonk is still having, not a hard time, but like, the ebb and flow of this game is so geared toward gun combat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, massively. That, you know, when someone's like on like a little scaffolding bridge and running towards you and they have a shotgun,
mm-hmm.
there's not a lot Tonk can do.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you just kind of eat a shotgun blast in the face and keep on going. So, like, they're, and if they get a crit off or something like that, I'm just dead. So, there's a little bit of reloading and things like that just involved with, you know, the luck of the draw. And I'm sure as the game goes on, I'll get more damage resistance and better armor and things like that. But it also seems like I'm really being funneled into, hey, you remember that power armor you had?
Mm-hmm.
It'd make a lot of this real easy, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it make your life a lot easier if you had power armor? And I don't want to wear it.
No.
So anyway, I went in there. I killed all these people. I rescued our guy. Travis got confidence again.
Mm-hmm.
We went back, and I guess the radio's better. Did you listen to the radio afterwards?
I actually didn't.
Okay. I didn't either.
It's like I probably care enough about this now.
Yeah, you'll listen to it at some point, though. You can update us in the future.
I will.
How about the radio?
Yeah.
Then we found a radio station.
Yeah.
Different radio station.
If you're out, like, wandering around sort of, like, north of the city, you'll find a radio station that is, like, a military frequency. Some number, it doesn't really matter. It's just like, oh, what's this? And then you pull it up on your radio, and it's a repeating recording of someone requesting reinforcements at the Cambridge police station.
Mm-hmm. And you did that.
Yep. Then I wandered down into Cambridge, and Cambridge is filled with ghouls for some reason. Fought a bunch of them and got to the police station. And what do you know? There's more ghouls and they're fighting this dude in big old power armor. He's just like, boom, 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 boom. And they're just like rushing him. So I help this guy out. And it turns out he's a dude named Paladin Dance from the Brotherhood of Steel. And he is like immediately like, well, I'm from the Brotherhood of Steel. Do you want to help me do something?
Mm hmm. And now it's time for our sub-podcast, Paladin Pals, where we talk about the differential philosophies of the Brotherhood of Steel as represented in different Fallout games. Because, did you know we've got yet a new Brotherhood of Steel here that seems to work totally differently than any other Brotherhood of Steel that we've seen before?
I mean, it seems like it. There's sort of, I mean, I don't know what you're zeroing in on, but this is so on the one hand, right, it is the East Coast Brotherhood of Steel that we saw in Fallout 3, and of course the West Coast Fallout has shown the Brotherhood becoming like more insular and losing power, particularly in the face of like the new California Republic and all that stuff. But here, the Brotherhood is still, like, putting together scouting parties, apparently, and going around the wasteland and trying to salvage technology, and just are, I mean, this guy was extreme, like, even by Fallout 3 standards, this guy was extremely immediately ready for me to, like, help him carry off whatever, like, sensitive mission he was doing, and I was literally some random person who walked into the zombie apocalypse as he was being obliterated.
Yeah, I mean, they're having a real fun time here with the paladin thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, they're having a real fun time with the fantasy dip, here.
Right.
The Brotherhood of Steel, for Bethesda, it seems, specifically. The fun thing about the Brotherhood of Steel is that you can do fantasy perspectives on the world, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're here to go and gather magical artifacts.
Right.
Right, essentially. I mean, that's the way they talk about it. We're here to do that and to preserve the world that was. And he is a paladin. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he engages the world ideologically in the way that someone who is on a holy mission would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of traditional paladin-y kind of stuff. But what's interesting to me is the way that Dance talks about, like, what the Brotherhood of Steel is up to, right? Like, we are preserving the world, and more importantly, we are trying to prevent the world from going the way it did again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he actually says, I don't think I wrote the whole thing down. Yeah, he says we want to make sure it never happens again. But he says FEV, biological agents, and nuclear disaster. He mentions all three of those in the conversation with him.
Because mm-hmm.
you can have kind of a deeper conversation about the Brotherhood of Steel with him. And it's like, oh, FEV. We're like already in FEV in this game, right? Mm-hmm. As like a thing that's just in the air that we're talking about. And I don't know, it's notable to me that's not really the way that people in Fallout 3, you know, the way that the Capital Wasteland group, that's not really the way they talk about it, right? Like,
no.
They're still a little bit more canticle for Leibowitz-y. They're pragmatic, right?
Right.
But they, like, see the world as like a contest of wills. They're a faction in that. They're ready to go fight it. But I didn't get a sense that they were, like, protecting the world from its own desires, right?
Right.
Like the good version of humanity, I guess, is the way that Dance is kind of pitching it here.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really in Fallout 3. That's I, at least Dance's particular perspective. Now, we are going to get more Brotherhood of Steel, there's going to be more people, right? So this might not be what everyone believes, but this kind of ideological perspective is a unique one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the one that the West Coast does at all.
Absolutely not, no. There's, I mean, just the, you are correct, especially when we get, like, later on when he starts talking about synths and he talks about them as abominations, right? He's talking about them as if they're, you know, darkspawn or something.
Yeah, right. They're ghouls or they're zombies, right? Raised by necromancers. I mean, he lives in a fantasy world that just has a fine replace of all the terms.
Mm-hmm.
And he's zapping ghouls.
There's also two other people here, Reese mm-hmm. and Halen. Halen is the doctor. You can find one of her like little logs where she talks about she's like a recent she recently joined the Brotherhood, I think, compared to the other two. And her log is something like, well, these guys, like this Brotherhood of Steel, they've got a lot of really good ideas, but their methods can seem kind of extreme, and I don't know how I feel about that. And it is almost like verbatim, that is how it is put in her log. So it's like, okay, mm-hmm. yes, thank you. Thank you, game designers. I know how I'm supposed to approach this faction now.
I didn't know before.
Yeah.
How would you have known?
There's also, like, Reese is just a huge jerk to you for no reason. And then there's a terminal that you can read that's all of their logs from since this detachment of Brotherhood of Steel members came to the Commonwealth. This is the other important thing that I think Dance tells you, is that they are all that's left of a much larger unit that has been whittled down, and they have this, radio transponder on top of the police station that is what you picked up, but they need to get a stronger signal out because they want to call for reinforcements from the Capital Wasteland, and so they need your help for that. But you can look through their like little terminal in there and get their logs from when they first showed up. And I got to tell you, Eleanor is not impressed with the Brotherhood of Steel, because their logs are things like, we are in the Commonwealth. Okay. Like that's thing number one. Can't wait to find all the technology here. Thing number two, we sent most of our guys to the Corvega plant and they all got murdered. And it's like, that's a thing that I cleared out on my own. At a lower level than I am now. You guys can't be that good.
They're not that good. They just have good technologies. I didn't get any information about this, but what do you think's going on with finding that power armor on the roof that we had at the sheriff's station or whatever? that we now own.
What do you mean?
Well, like, we have a suit of power armor.
Yes, right.
That definitely comes from one of these previous Brotherhood of Steel dudes running around.
Oh, I took that as pre-war. Like, I thought that, there's, like, a vertebrate, and I thought that vertebrate was, like, from the time of the war.
Oh, I mean, maybe it is. I don't know, one way or the other.
Yeah, I actually found another one. Like, I found a crashed vertebrate up in kind of, like, the northwest of the map, and there was another set of power armor near that.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah, I mean, this is not a particularly, you know, whatever, hard thing that occurs here. But this is where, this is the exact moment. Oh, I did like the conversation you can hear between, what were their names, Reese and Mullet, what did you say?
Aelin.
Aelin.
It would be great if her name was Mullet.
You could, like, hear them talking, they're like, the ghouls got me. I like a lot of the incidental dialogue here.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of happening in the world.
Yeah.
It is of a very high quality. It's not just like, hey, did you hear that over there there's, you know, government cheese in the old buttholes factory or whatever, right? Which is kind of like what would happen in Fallout 3. There's a lot of just like stuff, people talking about actual things in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
But this is where the glitches began for me.
Oh.
Yeah. So I got, this, the whole Brotherhood of Steel quest line in Fallout 4 is absolutely boned.
Uh-huh.
Like 100%. That, like, you would not believe the internet terms spilling about what's happening here. And I don't know why. I'm sure probably we could have installed an unofficial fix, but that's part of what the show is about. Like, if you install this thing vanilla wise, what are you going to get? Paladin Dance, after we clear out these ghouls who are assaulting the police station or whatever, he's just like, he just keeps saying, like, yeah, the ghouls are here. Yeah. Get your gun up. Get your gun up. Yeah. And I can't talk to him.
Uh-oh.
I reload. I can't talk to him. I reload. I can't talk. I, like, redo the event, like, 3 or 4 times. I can't talk to him. I look it up on the internet. Everyone is like, yeah, this quest is just broken. And it can break on every platform. It's never really been patched. And one of the solutions is to go complete a totally different quest line that will loop you back around to the Brotherhood of Steel. And then a flag in that quest can clear this flag. And so I said, I'm not doing that. and so the other solution is to open up console commands and then manually set your quest flag to being complete.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did.
Yeah.
Okay. So resolved, talk to Paladin Nance. We start the other quest, the next quest, which is got to get the transmitter,
mm-hmm.
You know, the thing you've been talking about here. So what's the plant they got to go to?
It's called the Arc Systems facility.
Right. And they're kind of like a rocketry
right
thing.
Right, right, right. It's like sort of on the other side of Cambridge.
Right. So a very funny thing happened to me. Paladin Nance was like, all right, we're ready to go. And he did a unique animation.
Uh-huh.
Or one, at least an animation I haven't seen before, which is like whipping out a helmet mm-hmm. and spinning it around in his hands and then popping it on his head.
Right, like it's his little Mario hat.
Right. As soon as he put it on his head, it disappeared. So the image is extreme. It's like, woo, 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 woo. And it like whips around in his hands and he boop, pops it on his head and it disappeared, like into nothing. And I was like, all right, cool. That's very funny. I laughed out loud. It was extremely funny.
Very good.
Then you have to follow Paladin Dance across the wasteland to get to the Arc System thing. It's like, what, 5-minute walk, yeah, 4-minute walk?
Something like that.
No, you see some raiders along the way. I fought some dogs.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Oh, just a few other things about the police station. I dug around in the cops terminals. Mm-hmm. You get some little like world buildy things about pre-war Boston. One, the police were like doing this big maneuver to catch some sort of like mob boss in Boston named Winter. And I imagine this is probably a thing that, if I wanted to, I could, like, go to various places on the map and find, like, more information about this guy and, like, little, you know, stashes or something. This doesn't seem like a main quest thing. This seems like a little unmarked quest.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that happens is you can look at the arrest logs, and one of the things that people are being arrested for is trying to unionize their workplaces. So Not great.
Interesting.
Yep. Don't get the sense things were going great for America. Yeah, and then you follow Dan's to the arc system. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah. Did anything weird happen to you when you got there?
Nope.
So he didn't turn around and immediately begin running back to the to the station?
Nope.
Well, so he gets to the door and he's like, "We're here. We need to go inside and get the transmitter." Conversation ends. He begins running back to the station. Right back along a different route, weirdly enough. So he begins going back. And I'm like, okay. And I follow him a fair amount of distance before I'm like, oh shit, he's just going back. He's like resetting position. So I like reload. I'm like, that can't be right. I walk with him again all the way from the police station to the place. It's another 4 minutes or whatever. We do it. He does the same thing.
Uh-oh.
He just starts running back. And then I'm like, all right, well, maybe I can resolve this by like resetting the AI. So I like start beating him to death with my sword.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, ow, ugh, ah, ugh, eh. Halfway through, he turns back and I'm like, I've resolved it. We get a quarter of the way back and then he turns around again. He starts heading back to the police station. So I look this up. I was like, what is going on? This is another glitch. He will just loop back and forth for eternity and never go to the next thing. Now, this whole time, this is very important. He has been running. So, you know, he's in power armor, but he's at a clip. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's going. He's moving as quickly as his little paladin legs can take him. The solution that I found on the Steam, you know, whatever forums, which are generally helpful for this kind of thing. They're like, here's the quest ID. You can go into console commands. And you can reset it to step one. And that will clear all the flags. And he will just go from that position to the thing. So I do that. I reset the quest.
Mm-hmm.
It teleports us into the police station. The quest begins again. He says nothing. There's no little fun animation. He doesn't say any of his barks that are like, oh, we're going to go this route to avoid the ghouls. He doesn't say that. We walk in like NPC, general NPC, like caravan route along the way. So it's not his scripted route that he would normally take. It's like Radiant Design. He's got his point he's going to, and his AI is, you know, point by point determining where he needs to go. So we take a totally different route to get there. We fight a billion ghouls mm-hmm. along the way.
Yeah.
We fight all these. We go through Grey Garden, which is its own quest that we'll talk about at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. He does not run. He walks at the slowest pace. And he will not move unless you are within a certain distance from him.
Right.
So I had to manually walk the whole way there with him. And the whole time I'm thinking, we might get there and this might not work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this could not work. This would be terrible. But thankfully, we got there and then it worked.
Great.
So we're good. I go in with Paladin Dance and do a, I don't know, I go into Moria and hang out with Paladin Dance for a while. Like, this is a straight up dungeon ass. It's wild to me that these are just straight up dungeons.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they are. Yeah, it's like mid-century tech office Moria.
And it's a dungeon. We said that already about Fallout 3. But it is supercharged in this one,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, there's no pretense of it being anything other than that. It's like, yeah, here's this mid-century office. It's got, like, two routes you can go through it. It's a Skyrim dungeon. I hope you enjoy it. At the end of it, you're going to end up with the same stuff that we had there, which is, like, a loop around that helps you leave
uh-huh.
more efficiently.
Yep.
The same way that Skyrim has. I hope you have a good time. Good luck. And so, yeah, I just follow Paladin Dance through. We kill a bunch of synths. Have you fought any synths before this point?
No, this is the first time I've ever encountered actual synths.
Yeah, they're scary.
I think they're an interesting design. And that's it.
They look like that little creature at the end of the film Annihilation.
I would say they remind me of the robots from the Will Smith iRobot.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are designed off of that, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
That little robot, he's got consciousness now.
Yeah. These guys don't. Human. They're just like, intruder. Bzz, bzz, bzz.
Yeah, they're Terminators.
Mm-hmm.
In their facelessness. And they like don't, you know, they move unnaturally, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
It would be better if they T-posed occasionally.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love that. I would love it if they T-posed when they died.
Yeah, right. Like, or if they like T-posed and spun around and ran into you, that would be cool. Yeah. I'm not even joking. That would be a cool thing to have happen.
Yes.
the Institute engineers weaponizing the T-pose. Yes.
But they just like run around. They got guns. Dan's is like, oh, they're abominations. Like the Institute made them to improve on humanity, and that's awful. It's like, I'm not really sure how this improves on humanity, but all right. I mean, you maybe know more about the Institute than I do, what they think is improvement.
Yeah, we can learn a little bit of about the Institute by talking to Dance, right? He's, you know, he says that they're scientists who went underground and that they're still kind of raiding the surface. And it's being set up here that, like, these are the competing technology ideologies in the world, right? Like a protectionist Brotherhood of Steel versus like an accelerationist Institute, essentially.
Right.
There's a conservative and a liberal form of, although liberal, not capital L liberal, but a, or capital C conservative, but, you know, an aggressive,
right.
Movement beyond. We got the only way out is through.
Right. Well, it's like, do we either like go out and steal all the technology and keep it from everyone, or do we steal everyone and turn them into technology?
Who can say which is the right
mm-hmm.
one? But we move through this whole thing. There's a little like set piece at the end that's not really flagged super well as a set piece, and so like I didn't really understand what was happening. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about the engine test?
yeah.
Yeah. You go through all of this stuff, you fight all these synths, and eventually you have to like go down because this place was designing rockets. And this is what I mean when I talk about the kind of lack of flavor to a lot of the institutional terminals, I guess, is you find out what was going on with Arc Systems, that they were maybe in a position to get some government contracts. They had to put up more security. None of this really matters. It's just kind of like there. But mm-hmm. you eventually like get down to like their test chamber where they were like firing the engine propulsors or whatever. And you have to reestablish power in some little side room. You can also find this gun called the Junk Jet. Did you find this?
No.
So there's a gun, like a big old, like, almost bazooka-looking thing. And you pick it up, it's called a Junk Jet. And what it does is you can take all of the junk in your inventory and use it as ammo. Like, it'll fire that. I didn't actually use it because it's not my style. I also don't carry that much junk. But there's a, like, holotape next to it. And you can play this, and it's the guy who designed the Junk Jet, who was he worked at this place, and it's him talking. It's like he's like Harold Lauder, right, from The Stand, where he's like, mm-hmm. they're always making fun of me because I only graduated high school. Like, he's the only person at this place who doesn't have an advanced degree, and so he has designed the Junk Jet gun, and he is going to do a workplace shooting.
Oh God! I heard the beginning of it,
yeah.
But then I turned the engine on and it just canceled out the audio, so I never went back and listened to the rest of it.
So yeah, no, he's going to do a workplace shooting, basically,
fuck.
Like
with the Junk Jet.
Yes, with the Junk Jet. Except, and then it ends with him being like, you know, I can't wait until they come to work on Monday, October 23rd, 2077, which is of course the day the Great War happens. So like. By virtue of nuclear disaster, right? By virtue of the world being burned to a crisp, this guy doesn't pull off his workplace massacre.
Can you imagine writing this quest?
That was my thought. I was just like, oh my God.
I just don't think that I would do that.
Yep.
I mean, that's a fascinating thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like, I don't know. I don't think I would. The funny joke of your workplace shooting not going through, right?
Like, yeah.
The bitter irony,
mm-hmm.
you know, that truly what form of irony is this?
I think just regular irony.
No, there's like, where we know a thing because of the conceit.
Oh, the dramatic
narrative.
Irony of us knowing what happened. Right.
Right. So to be like, I'm going to get dramatic irony in my damn Fallout. a workplace shooting based dramatic irony.
Yep.
But anyway, so you turn that engine on and Paladin Dance is like in.
I was so hoping this would kill him.
Me too. It's disappointing that it doesn't because there's no cost to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's a big test chamber, rocket test chamber, and you can turn on the rocket test, and Dance is like fighting like 15 ghouls, right?
They're
and
synths.
It would be hard to fight. Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry. He's fighting synths. I got my goblins confused yes. with my orcs for a minute. I'm so sorry.
Uh-huh.
That's my mistake. He's fighting a bunch of synths, and you turn it on, and it initiates a rocket test, and it just obliterates everything in the room. And you're watching him get cooked.
Uh-huh.
He, like, turns on fire.
Uh-huh.
And then you go out, and it is the most, like, video game bullshit ever, right? Uh-huh. Because he's like, wow, that would have hurt me a lot, except for my suit kept me from being cooked. Anyway, sounds like the mission's over.
Yep.
And remember, for me, he doesn't have a helmet on.
Oh.
So I'm watching his big bald-ass head just getting annihilated by rocket fire the whole time. And nothing's happening to him. Well, no negative
implications. He was wearing the rest of the suit.
Yeah. Thank God his shoulders were okay.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, so that's what happened.
Yep, he like walks you out. He has his little light transmitter or whatever. He says, we were sloppy in there, but you're good work. Like, please join the Brotherhood of Steel. And I'm like, no thanks. And he's like, well, take my special gun that I made for you anyway.
Yes, this is my other gun.
Yeah. No, it's like it is. It's like his like personally modded gun. And then he like gives it to you. And I'm like, don't you need it? And he's like, well, I always carry two.
Yeah, you know, I really don't like this. Like, that sounds like a wild thing to say, but, like, I don't really like... In Fallout 3, maybe I should say this. In Fallout 3, there were, like, special goofy guns.
Uh-huh.
But the special goofy guns were like, hey, you went and built a flamer, you know, in your garage.
Uh-huh.
You know, or you built the rail spike driver, mm-hmm. right? You went and built that wacky gun, and like now you can go play with it, but you did it yourself.
Right.
You know? Here it's like, it's here's my magic sword, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. Like, here's my special gun with its special capabilities that I'm giving you, and it's called, like, Righteous Brotherhood or whatever, right?
Right.
And it's its own little thing. It really is, like, I don't know. There's something to me about, like, it messes with the flavor or the form or like the science fiction vibe here mm-hmm. to me.
It's very fantasy to have like
it's very yeah
all the
right.
all these named weapons. Right, like in older iterations of Fallout, the person who named their gun is a like you have that character note to underscore that the character is a little unhinged or something, right? That their picture of the world and how they see themselves in it is not really is not level with the way the world actually works because they've got some sort of weird delusion of grandeur or something.
Right. Yeah, it just, I don't know. Feels a little... I don't know. It's another symptom of what we've been talking about, right? Which is like the Bethesda method combines these two generic modes in a way that plays perfectly fine, but when you think about it for a minute, really produces some like strains in the form
mm-hmm.
that are hard to work through. But anyway, and that's what we did.
Yep.
He says he, and then he basically tries to recruit you for the Brotherhood of Steel. What'd you say there?
I was not interested.
I just said, I'll think about it. So you've been recruited by no one.
Right. I mean, I guess somehow I am technically part of the Minutemen. Like, I didn't agree to anything, but Preston gave me their flare gun anyway. So.
So I'm a general of the Minutemen, but you're nothing. But no matter what, you can summon up a fire elemental
yes.
at your desire. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. I think next time, Do you have any final thoughts to zoot through here?
No, not particularly.
I don't think so either. So next time we'll be moving some Nick Valentine quests along. We'll be kind of doing that. And basically, I think there are, kind of like Fallout 3, there are a couple world state changes. Mm-hmm. I believe at the end of next episode, we will inaugurate the first world state change.
Yes, we will. I have done this, I've done these missions already, and I know what you're talking about.
So I think it'll be interesting. Very curious to hear what you have to say about that, Michael, because I think it is also some, almost some Final Fantasy stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
Not merely fantasy, but a Final Fantasy. And so we will talk about that in 2 weeks. We'll be back then. Thanks so much for checking this out. You can go to patreon.com/rangetouch to get access to the RSS feed for this if you want to listen to it as a podcast rather than checking it out on YouTube, where you probably are checking it out right now. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button if you enjoyed listening to it. Leave us a comment. Michael, do we have a question for the comment? That people should leave.
I've got to ponder this now.
I've got a good one.
Okay. Oh, if you've got one to go, then you should do it, because like now I'm just trying to think of what would the ammo be for the gun that you built that would.
Right. Well, I've got a similar question, which is if you had to name a science fiction weapon, what would the name be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's got to be based on your job, right? So Paladin Dance, you know, has got Righteous Fury or whatever the hell it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're like a plumber, it's got to be the whole pipe.
Uh-huh.
Whatever, right? So think about it. Leave that as a comment. Tell us what your fantasy weapon would be named. Mm-hmm. And we'll go from there. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. Michael, take us out.
Until next time, folks, war never changes, but Fallout sure does. Everything!